call the other day, and Lori suggested I go to the doctor. And instead of being the big baby that I am, I went, and they gave me this crutch, and I hate it. I actually have two, but I want to actually be able to do things with my hand and move around. But so, yeah, that's where we're at. It's kind of what I'm going to talk about today. Bunch of grown men acting like kids. In Luke 7, verses 18 through 35, John's disciples come to Jesus and they ask him if he was the one to come. Yeah, I know it doesn't fit. There's an optical issue, but it doesn't matter. Ask him if he is the one to come. If that's the one that John has been preaching about. If Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus tells them to look at the works that he was doing. Look at all of the many wonderful things that he was doing, because his works testified to who he was. He told them to go tell John what they saw. So after John's disciples leave, Jesus talks to the crowd and he tells them about John, how John is a fulfillment of prophecy, how John is the greatest man in the world. Now, this statement split the crowd. The regular people, the tax collectors, the sinners, declared God just because they had been baptized with John's baptism. The Pharisees rejected God's plan. They rejected the purpose of God because they didn't listen to John. They hadn't been baptized with John's baptism. Now, there's something amazing going on here. Christ is doing miracles. He's healing the sick. But this crowd split themselves over John the Baptist. In Luke 7, verses 31 through 35, it says, "To what then shall I compare this people of this generation? What are they like? They are like children sitting in the marketplace calling to each other. We played the flute for you and you did not dance. We sang a dirge and you did not weep. For John the Baptist has come eating no bread and drinking no wine, and you say he has a demon. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, 'Look at him, a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners.' Yet wisdom is justified by all of her children." See, Jesus just called them a bunch of kids, a bunch of children. Jesus uses this strange image here, kids yelling back and forth at each other. "We played the flute for you and you didn't dance. We played you a dirge and you didn't weep." What he's saying is, you aren't doing it the way we thought you were going to do it. Why aren't you doing it our way? Have you ever watched kids play cops and robbers? They'll chase each other around with finger guns and yell bang, 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 and expect other kids to fall down dead or hurt or whatever. Sometimes they'll do it to an adult. Bang, bang, bang. And expect you to drop to the ground. If you don't, they get mad. I think Jesus, with this one passage, explains all of our society. I was a kid in the 80s. I was cute and incredibly ridiculous. I don't remember playing the flute. I don't remember trying to make anyone dance or anyone mourn with my dirges. I also don't remember playing cops and robbers, but I do remember the comic Spy versus Spy. It's kind of over the top comic strip. There's one spy dresses in all black, the other spy dresses in all white, and they do things to each other. One tries to sneak up and steal some secret documents, and the other one will drop an anvil on his head. Nobody ever wins. There's never a clear winner, because in the next comic, you know what will happen? The same thing will happen to the other guy that started it in the beginning with. Nobody ever wins. It's kind of a metaphor for our nation. See, back then, I watched our nation play the same games with Russia. I saw Ronald Reagan say to Mikhail Gorbachev, "Tear this wall down." I watched the Soviet Union fall apart. I watched the end of the really good era of spy movies. If you look around, though, all this stuff is still happening. Russia is saber-rattling. They're flying planes over our airspace. They use propaganda and social media to affect our lives and to affect our government. It's a little like living in that spy versus spy comic book. It's like kids yelling back and forth, dance our dance, cry at our dirge. This is just the nature of the world that we live in. It's us versus them. We are a bunch of kids arguing, probably about things we don't even really understand. I think it has snuck into the church. We divide ourselves into groups. We fight over ideas. We call it having the moral high ground, or we call it being conservative, or we call it being liberal. If someone agrees with me, they're on my side and all others are wrong. It becomes us versus them when it should be us for them. This idea it's really a pharisaical idea. It's something the Pharisees would do, and it's a judgment on other people. Jesus has a parable that he talks about of a Pharisee and a sinner saying a prayer. This is in Luke 18, verses 9 through 14. See, Jesus tells a story about the Pharisee and the sinner praying. The Pharisee actually thanks God for not making him like the sinner. He tells God to look at all of the good things that he's done. This is his prayer in Luke 18, verses 11 through 13. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, "God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, and even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I get." But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." See, the Pharisee's prayer is all about what set him apart from the sinner. Look at how much better I am than all of those people. He justified himself by, instead of letting God do the justification, he put himself in the place of God. The sinner couldn't even look up. He knew his place. He expected his justification to come from God, not from himself. We see it again in Luke with the story of the woman washing Jesus' feet in Luke 36 through 50. Jesus is eating at a Pharisee's house, and this woman comes in, washes his feet with her tears, anoints him with very expensive ointment. And the Pharisee says this, Luke 7:39. Now the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, and he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who is touching him, for she is a sinner." He's saying that Jesus is one of those people because he let one of those people touch him. Again, a Pharisee putting himself in the place of God, in the place of judgment. He's making himself equal to God here. Romans 14 and verse 4 says, "Who are you to pass judgment on the servant of another? It is before his own master that he stands or falls. He will be upheld, for the Lord is able to make him stand." In Galatians 5, verses 13 through 15, it says, "For we were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another." See, us versus them will leave us consuming each other. It leads to cannibalism. If we are not careful, we can destroy someone. We can destroy ourselves. We can destroy the very people that we are trying to save. You know, we are no better than anyone out there on the street. We are better off because we are saved, but that doesn't make us better people. Jesus was eating with tax collectors in Matthew 9, verses 10 through 13, and the Pharisees had a problem with this. They didn't like the company that he was keeping. They thought it was not good. But he was eating with those people, those sinners, those tax collectors, those unworthy ones. And Jesus says this, Matthew 19, verses 12 through 13. But when he heard it, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what it means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." Are we being physicians? Would you go to a doctor that made fun of you, called you names because you were overweight? Would you go to a doctor that only told you good things about yourself because, well, he was your friend and he didn't want to hurt your feelings? No, we go to doctors when we are sick. They help us to be better. We, as Christians, must be physicians. We must help people get better. In Matthew 5, 14 through 16, we are called to be light. Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." What does light do? It shows us obstacles in our path. It gives us opportunities to walk around hazards. It makes sure that we see the hole that if we step in it and hurt ourselves, we know what happened. What does it not do? It doesn't guilt us into not tripping. It doesn't fight us or doesn't belittle us when we do trip. Light shows people a better way. It shows them the way to go, and that's it. So, do people glorify God because of the way you live your life? Or are you using your life, your lifestyle, to divide yourself off from them, to separate yourself from the world around you, and put yourself in a group, and then make the excuse it's us versus them? If that's what you're doing, if that's what we're doing, we are putting our light under a bushel, and no one is getting any benefit from its light. Have you ever noticed the us versus them way of thinking in your own life? Now, the news does this to me just about every time I start reading it. It has a way of dehumanizing people, turning them into demographics. It defines for us who those people are. While we read about them and read about what's going on in the rest of the world, we're happy that those things aren't happening to us, that they're happening to those people over there. Back in 2014, there was an outbreak of Ebola. It was pretty bad. It's a hemorrhagic fever. It causes basically your insides to liquefy. Naturally, the U.S. was worried that it would come over here, and it did in a few cases. But it was in the news day after day after day, and the death toll just kept going up and up. Now, I was watching these numbers pretty closely. It was a morbid fascination of mine. It was like watching a train wreck. I got to where I was looking at the news just to see if that number went up or not. You see, that number didn't affect me. Those people must have done something to deserve what they were getting. Are you kidding me? What was I thinking? You see, each of those numbers was a life. It was someone's kid, it was someone's mom, it was someone's dad. What did they do to deserve what they were getting? They didn't do anything. They were just people like me. People are not numbers. We are not data sets. We are not demographics. Each of us has a life, one life. Romans 3:23 says, "All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." You see, that number kept going up, and I kept watching people like me, people that had fallen short of what God wanted for them. I watched them die. And when I realized what I was doing, I started praying every day. I prayed for that number to stop. I prayed for the people like me to have more time to get right with God. Now, I also have a problem with politics. It gets me into the us versus them way of thinking like nothing else. See, politics are all about what we want or what we think we need. It's about protecting self at the expense of others sometimes. See, I used to listen to talk radio, and it had a way of making me angry all the time. The people talking, the DJs, they have to rile you up. They need you to listen so that they can keep their sponsors happy. But I have a question for you. Have you ever met a Christian that voted differently than you? Did that make them your enemy? You see, their vote canceled out your vote. I know for a fact that there are people in this audience that have different opinions on the workings of the government than I do. Does that make me less of your brother? So why do we have governments? Why are there nations? In Acts 17, starting in verse 26, it says, "And he made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined allotted periods and the boundaries of their dwelling place, that they should seek God and perhaps feel their way towards him and find him. Yet he is actually not far from each one of us, for in him we live and we move and we have our being. As even some of your own poets have said, for we are indeed his offspring." Nations exist to help people find God. Romans 13, verses 1 through 4, says, "Let every person be subject to governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is a servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer." Got to remember, Paul is talking about the Roman government here. He's talking about the government that would persecute the church. But God instituted that government to punish bad conduct. Governments are instituted by God, but they're not always godly institutions. Just like marriage was instituted by God, but not every marriage is always godly. In Acts chapter 3 and chapter 4, Peter and John are arrested by the leaders of their people, by their local government, and they're told not to preach the gospel. In Acts 4 and verse 19, this is their response. "But Peter and John answered them, 'Whether it is right in the sight of God to listen to you rather than God, you must judge. For we cannot but speak what we have seen and heard.'" See, our responsibility is always going to be God first, the government second. In Matthew 22, 17 through 22, the Pharisees have gotten this group of people together to catch Jesus in his words. And he tells them this. Actually, they ask him this. They say, "Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why put me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin for the tax." And they brought him the denarius. And Jesus said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" And they said, "Caesar." And then he said to them, "Therefore, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard it, they marveled, and they left and went away. See, Jesus was talking about taxes, but I think we can also apply this to our civic duty. I will give to the government what they are due, but I will give nothing more. I was made in the image of God. I will give myself to God. I will do as Peter and John did. I will put God first, and the government will have to deal with it. In Matthew 16 and verse 18, it says, "On this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." See, the church belongs to Christ. It's not the government's responsibility to protect it. It's not necessarily my responsibility to protect it. Christ will protect it. Not even the gates of hell will stand against it. We are stuck in this world that wants us to choose a side. It's like a giant kids game. We have to stop playing the game. We have to change the rules. It can't be us versus them anymore. It has to be us for them. In Philippians 2, starting in verse 1, it says, "So if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affliction in sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourself. Let each of you look not only to his own interest, but also to the interest of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God to be a thing grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant. Being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Therefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not as only in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you, both to will and to work for his good pleasure." Paul wants us to be of the same mind. Tells us not to do things out of selfish ambition. Look at everyone as more important than yourself. Follow Christ's example. He emptied himself. He went to his death for you. Church, this is how we're going to work out our salvation. In Luke 7, Jesus called the crowd a bunch of kids because, well, they were acting like a bunch of kids. They had divided themselves up. They were making everything about us versus them. They were saying, "Yay, I follow John. Why would I follow John?" That is the fight. That is what's going on. When they have Christ right in front of them, they should have been looking at the things he was doing. He should have seen those things bear witness to what he was and who he was. But no, they were a bunch of kids. Us versus them is childish. Looking down on people for any reason, because they aren't doing the things the way that you think they should do, because they don't believe exactly the same way you do, because they can be dismissed as a group that you wouldn't associate with. All childish. The only way we can win this game is to not play. Romans 3:23, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." There is no us versus them. There are only sinners, trying their best to make it through this life. You know, by the standards of this world, some are succeeding, some are failing, but all are lost. Even in the church, all have sinned. Our only difference from the world is Christ. In John 10, starting in verse 7, "So Jesus again said to them, 'Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and to kill and to destroy. I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. See, Jesus is the good shepherd. He came to show us the right way to go. He came so that we could have life. He pulls us out of this world. He puts us into his kingdom. And we have a new set of rules to live by. Us versus them needs to be us for them. We are not playing by their rules any longer. It's about getting that abundant life. It's about pleasing God. It's about following Christ's example. 1 John 4 and verse 20 says, "If anyone says, 'I love God,' and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, whoever loves God must also love his brother." People are people. If they disagree with us, if they vote differently than us, if they wear different clothes, if they live different lives, people are not statistics. People are people. If we cannot love them, we cannot love God. We live in a us versus them world. Christ came for everyone, not just us. He came for them too. We need to help each other. We need to build each other up. We need to be there for all people. So if you need help, if you need any help, we will do whatever it takes to help you get to heaven. So if you need the prayers of the congregation, or if you need to be baptized, please come forward as we stand and sing.